So, seminar, agelessness, lecture, lesson 2, and the topic for lesson 2 is My Universe Exists Now. My Universe Exists Now. That's kind of an exciting idea. My Universe Exists Now. So, here we are. Now, interesting, isn't it? I define nowness as an entity incomparable. As I latch on to the now, I am allness. How do I define now? That's a good question, isn't it? Everyone has difficulty defining what now means. Now means not this instant. Now means not now, that is the present or the future of the past. Now is an indescribable concept of the allness and the at this, and you can't say instant, but it's like an instant. How do you say what now is when you, well, like we were talking before about dreams. You are dreaming in the now, and you are dreaming and you are doing something in the now. You're not thinking of the past, you're not thinking of the future, but you're in the now. So when we ever do anything, and we do it so seldom, when we ever do anything in the now, it has no relationship to the past, it has no relationship to the future, it has only a relationship, if the word is belongs here, to the now. It is only this present moment, and that doesn't define it, because present moment is too large an area. The instant is too large an area. Can you imagine the instant being too large an area? It's hard to think of that, but that's what it is. Now is, well, just for instance, I say, I love you. Now, that is a now condition, that is a now situation. You instantly respond to it, oh, and you have a now experience. And then I say, I hate you. And you say, oh, you know, that's a now experience. And whatever is an instant experience, and of course the word instant messes it up, but whatever is an instant experience is the now. Now, I say, I love you. And you don't say, you only love me because of my money. And you only love me because I'm beautiful. You only love me because I'm a desirable person. You only love me because I said I'd love you if you loved me, you know. And that's the only, you see, you don't say all those things. None of those things come into the picture. It's just, I love you, and it's a complete now idea. The moment we make past comments or future comments about it, then it is no longer now. Now is if I can think of this way to say it, now is so pure. It has no comparison. Now has no past, future, present. It is just now. It has nothing to define it. It has nothing to describe it. It just is so pure. It's like, the Hindus like to have you look around the sun. They don't have you look into the sun, you burn your eyes out. But they have you look around the sun, and you look around the sun 10 times this way, then you look around the sun 10 times this way, and then you go about your business. But you never do it longer than that. Some people do it longer, and of course they're messed up. But that's their choice. And the teaching is not to do that, to hurt yourself. We were at the Menninger Foundation where the Hindus were teaching the doctors and scientists and people there who were researching internal states of consciousness. And they were telling us all about how to look at the sun. And Pierre Avalon Khan, who was the elder, was still with us, and he was describing the program and telling us how to do this in a very beautiful way. And he was an extremely important man in his group, and he had a large group of followers, and his son, Pierre Blancan Jr., is now running his organization and doing it beautifully. But the father was just so in tune with the philosophy that he believed in, he was able to share it with all the people who were there. And none of the people who were there had any doubt that it would function. And he taught us how when you want to do a healing, you want to do some healing work, you look around the sun 10 times each way, but you have to be very careful that you stay so many degrees away from the sun, and you have to stay in this certain latitude of ideas, and because it's a purifying act. And if you allow yourself to get burned, then you'll lose your eyesight. So you have to be very careful in doing these things, because it can be very, very challenging to your body if you're not careful. Well, we learned that, and we learned living in the now from them at that point of view. The Sufi dancers were teaching us living in the now too, and how we would just go out and do the dance that they told us to do, and the whirling dervish type of dance, and whirl around and whirl around and whirl around until we almost lost consciousness and fall down in the grass while we're whirling around. But they told us all the description behind it. And like I told you, it is something that anyone can learn if you want to learn these things. Because one young man who was teaching a class, he had the book in front of him of how to teach it. And so the book was what anyone could pick up and read, but he read it to us. And he said, this is how you do it. Now let's do it. You know, he was not making a claim that he knew it and that he studied it and that he was aware of it. He merely said, this is the chapter he was given and this is what we were to do. So we did it. And what it had taught us to do was to look inside of people and see where their problems were. To look right inside their physical body and recognize what their conditions were, to make a diagnosis of how to work with it and how to help them. And it functioned. It functioned very nicely. And we did this for the whole week we were down there. It was fascinating doing these things. But you see, this is merely an indication of how we, when we are ageless, can do these things. When we are ageless, when we are eternally young, we can do these things so beautifully, because as we do them, what happens? We are open and receptive, just like a child. If you say to a child, you know how to do this already. Yeah, that's right. Well, show me. And then he shows you, and he does. And we had Bailey. Bailey is the daughter of Gregor and Rochelle. And Bailey was here, and she's, 9 years old, something like that, 9 years old. And I had my brand new tablet computer, and $2,500, you know. And her mother and father were looking at the computer and trying to figure out how to work it. And I said, with tongue in cheek, not too much so, I said, let Bailey show you. And so Bailey took the writing stick, and she just went here, tip, 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 tip. And she said, okay, now, here's how you do it. Now, tip, 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 tip. 9 years old. She had never had this computer before, and she has computers, but, you know, they're not as good as this. Her computers are much slower and much older, you know, and much just not like this. But she was one with the computer. She became one with the computer, and she listened to the computer. She was in the now with it, and she just click, 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 and up came all of the things that she wanted to show us. Now, this is not a unique situation. Children do this because they are not inhibited, they are not intimidated by the computer. You and I, we're inhibited and intimidated by the computer. We're afraid, oh, I don't want to hurt something. I don't want to mess something up. I don't want to mess it up. That's the best way to learn. And you see, if you have people show you how to do it, then you'll never learn how to do it. It's only when you apply what you think you know to it and practice and experiment that you come up with the perfect answers. You understand? Only when you get in there and do it yourself that you find out that you are truly aware. You are truly ageless. Now, I say to all of us, let's go back to our childlikeness, you know. I don't say go back to our infancy, you know, but go back to our childlikeness. Jesus said you must become as little children to enter the kingdom of heaven. So we want to become as little children to enter into the awareness of all knowledge. And all knowledge is in every being right now, in every child, in every circumstance. And if we can somehow encourage children to just delight in learning, not learning so much, but delight in revealing what they already know, then that is the agelessness that we want to have. We want to delight in revealing what we already know. We already know exactly how to do everything. We already know exactly how to put these causes in motion. I was talking to Michael Milligan, our builder, and he was saying to me, now, I read your book, and he said, it's a good book, but very complex, you know, because it's new to him, you know, and it is. He should have read A Gift from Self to Self, and I'm number one first, but this is for advanced students. Quiet Healing Zone is not for beginners. And so he read it, and he said, now what about that knowing everything, you know, when you know everything? He said, I like that idea that I know everything, you know, because, you know, when I'm doing my work and my job, I like to be able to know everything. And I said, oh, you mean the illustration where we said, I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer? Yeah, that one, you know. Now, you see, he got part of it. See, a little learning is a dangerous thing. He got part of it, but he didn't get the route map. He didn't get the trip map. He didn't know how to get into this knowing, how to get into that. But the trip map is, I know that I know that I know the divine in me knows the answer. And this is what we use when we are speaking our word and expressing our youthfulness, expressing our magnificence of going into the eternal allness of all. Now, nowness as an entity. I know that I know that I know God in me is the answer. That is an entity. That is an awareness. That is a knowledge that we have the ability to speak our word and know whatever it is we want to know. Now, Herb, why don't you demonstrate it for us? Why don't you show us how it works? Well, that's something I just don't do. For myself, I do it. When there's nobody around, I do lots of fun things, you know. But when I have people around, I don't do it. And, well, Herb, that's because you can't do it. No, it's because if I do it and I show you, then you can do it, but I can't. Now, you know, you silly mice. You hear the story of Jesus healing the sick and raising the dead, and you say, well, he can do it, but we can't, you know. And sure, that's what you always say. They can do it. And Jesus said, now, disciples, get off your fat butts and get out there and do something. He said, go and preach and teach and heal and raise the dead, you know, and heal the sick. And the disciples said, but we can't. I said, go and do it. Now, go and do it. He commanded them to do it, you know. And, of course, they started doing it then. But up to that time, Jesus can do it, but they can't, you know. Someone else can do it, but we can't. Now, we look at, what's his name, the Ayurveda man? Deepak Chopra. We look at Deepak Chopra, and he's the most amazing man. He's brilliant as a medical doctor. He's brilliant as a surgeon. He's brilliant as an Ayurveda man. He's brilliant in writing. He's brilliant in storytelling. He's just brilliant, and he is doing it very well. But people listen to him and become enamored with him, become bewitched by him and say, he can do it, but we can't, you know. And he says, hey, what I am teaching you, you can do. But you've got to get your bloated nothingness out of the way. You've got to get your attitude out of the way that says you can't do it. You got to believe in yourself. And he goes around doing it. And then he tells the story of Merlin the magician, remember? And Merlin the magician was in King Arthur's time. And then he tells about young King Arthur studying under Merlin the magician. The king studying under Merlin the magician. And the story is so delightful. There may be a seed of fact in it, you know, but it's a very delightful story. And as you read it, you think, golly, if Merlin could teach King Arthur, who was really the young king, you know, not the king at the time, but this young punk kid who was not really paying attention to the game, if he could teach him that well, maybe I could learn too, you know. And so then we hear of other people doing magical, wonderful things, and we say, golly, I'd love to be able to do that. That would be wonderful to be able to do. And you can't. You can't. The moment you ever compare yourself to somebody else, the moment you ever want to do something that somebody else is doing, you cut yourself off. You're not in the ballpark anymore. It is something that you do because you want to do it. Now, Ellen Germany has been with me for the last several thousand years, and she's been doing a good job, but she is reluctant to take stage when I'm around, because she says, Herb, you do it so much better. Well, what does she do? She does it exquisitely when I'm not around. People love her when I'm not around. They sit at her feet and say, tell me more. You do this so well. You're so brilliant. You're so wonderful. And people say, when I go on seminars without her, they say, where's Ellen? You know, we wanted to hear from her too. We wanted to, because Ellen carries the fort while I'm doing other things. And she's around talking to all the people and getting them in. And they don't realize that she is lecturing to them in this subtle way while I'm doing it in the more open way. And it is such a powerful thing. Now, she doesn't believe she's good. She does, and that's good. She shouldn't believe that she's good. She should just believe that what she teaches and shares is exciting. Now, Sylvia went to New Orleans, or St. Louis, rather, and when she was in St. Louis, she was speaking to different groups there, and all the people of the groups came up to her afterwards, and they said, oh, tell us more, tell us more, tell us more about this, tell us more. You know, you're such a great teacher, you're such a great speaker, you're so wonderful. Now, was she so wonderful? Or was it that the information she was giving them was powerful information? Now, if along with the information she gave them being powerful, if along with that she had the genius of sharing it, then that was a double whammy. That was twice good. And that's what we should believe in ourselves. We shouldn't just think that the things that we teach stand by themselves. We should know that it's more than that. It's our presentation, too. And you know that. You look at me and you say, well, Herb, you're so wonderful. You're so fantastic, you know. And how could we ever do that? Well, you do that very easily. Be yourself and have fun. And don't try to emulate anybody else. Just be yourself and have fun and tell what you believe. Tell what you know is going on in your heart. Tell what you know is important for you. But you really believe for yourself. Now, what do you believe for yourself? So Ingeborg over here, she writes an article, and then we read the article and say, who did you copy this from? And she said, I wrote it myself. And I said, well, why don't you write more often, you know? Because she writes just beautifully. But the thing is, she is reluctant to do it for whatever reason, and how silly that is. How silly that is. Write, Ingeborg, write. And show what's on your mind, show what's in your heart, show what's in. And Sylvia has the opportunity to do that with her practitioner's column every month, you know. And she puts out the practitioner's letter every month, and she gathers together interesting ideas, and people love to read it. They feel uplifted by it. Now, if I would pull the practitioner's letter away from Sylvia and say, Sylvia, write. Not the practitioner's letter, just write. What would happen to Sylvia? Would she be as good a writer? Would she be as good a presenter of ideas as she was when she had the practitioner letter? Why do you say yes? Please consider this microphone here. Why you say because she's good?
Yes.
You said because she's good, and you said it in such a soda voice. My goodness sakes, Ellen, what did she say?
She said that Sylvia is good.
Gertrude, what did she say?
She said all of Sylvia does is good.
Dorothea, what did she say?
Oh, Sylvia is good.
Ingeborg, what did she say?
That Sylvia is good.
Love, what did she say?
Button,
what did she say? Sylvia, what did she say?
That Sylvia is good.
Well, you could say that I am good, but that Sylvia is good. Now, do you believe her, Sylvia? Then why don't you do it? Yeah.
Because she does.
No, no. She does, it's true, but she doesn't show it to us. Now, we would like to see all these beautiful articles you're writing and all these beautiful concepts you're writing and all these beautiful books you're writing. I mean, here you got all the time in the world to do these things, you know, and do them. Now, who's laughing here?
I am.
What are you laughing about?
She has all the time in the world. I'm thinking of what she does around.
Dorothea?
Yes.
What she does is garbage. Dorothea, cleaning the house is not important. Dorothea, making meals is not important. Working on the gist or something like that, that might be, but that doesn't take that much time. We have cut the gist down from 12 to 4 a year. Now, Dorothea, she has time to waste, and if she would be allowed to get off the internet and not look up airline tickets and stuff like that, she'd have more time. You understand, Dorothea?
Yes.
Now, Dorothea,
yes.
I am not kidding you. You are delighted and amazed at the things she does, but just imagine if she didn't do all these little nothings, you know? Like going shopping, coming visiting you, and playing with your computer, and doing all these things, and being patient with you while you figure out what she's doing. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Now, that takes time.
Yes.
Now, imagine if she would take 1 hour a day and write in the now. What would happen? She would have nowness as an entity published in her works, in her writing, and she would be good. Now, why doesn't Ingeborg do it? Ingeborg does not feel that she is able to do it. Ingeborg feels that what's more important is for her to knit, you know? And she knows she can do it. Now, here we come to the big question. Why doesn't Ellen do it? Ellen has so much brilliance in her gray matter that if she would spread it around, she could fertilize the entire universe. And that's true. All she has to do is just sit at her computer and write. But what does she do? She sits at her computer and does other things. And she pays bills and answers letters, and she does proctoring, and she does whatever you do. I don't know what all you do. But the thing is, here's a good point. Here's a good point for all of you. Is it important, could it be important for Ellen to write? Does anyone have a comment? Lydia, could it be important for her to write?
Yes, it could.
All right. Gertrude?
Yes.
Sylvia?
Yes.
Dorothea, could it be important for her to write?
Oh, yes.
Ingeborg, could it be important for her to write?
Yes.
Okay. Why doesn't she do it?
She does.
She could take, she doesn't. She only does the necessary writing. If she would sit down an hour a day, just an hour a day, and start writing, no matter, don't think about what you're going to write, just start writing, and it'll come to you. She takes the time to renew old acquaintances on the telephone with her family and friends, and that time she could be writing. She takes time to talk to our students and get chummy with them. That time she could be writing. The students who are blessed by each one of our practitioners working with them are wonderful, and their lives are improved. And just think what Ellen, Sylvia, and Ingeborg would do if they started writing extemporaneously. Beautiful ideas that come out of their inner factory, just think what would happen. This would be the most fantastic group of whatever they would write that you could ever want. And that's what we're talking about. My universe exists now. Are we going to let that universe be expressed through us? Are we going to be ageless and do this? Or are we going to say, I'm too tired. I have to get to bed. I have to do this. Do you know what an artist does? An artist has a dream in his mind, and he starts painting or writing or drawing or whatever he does, and then he stops and goes to the bathroom, and he looks at the clock, and here it is 2 days later. 2 days. He doesn't even know the passage of time. He doesn't even know that he's cold. He doesn't even know the fire went out in his stove and it's cold in his room. He doesn't even know that. He doesn't even know that he should have gone potty, you know, because his body just stopped functioning, you might say, and needing to have attention, and he is expressing his genius. Now, are each one of you artists? You are. Are each one of you good artists? Very good. Are each one of you artists that are so dedicated that you too could go to work on your project and not think another thing? What would happen if Ellen went to the hospital and had her toe replaced? She'd be gone for a week, maybe, yeah? Okay, what would happen if Ellen just stopped coming for meals for a week and just sat behind her typewriter, computer, and just wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote, and after that week, then she'd come out and she'd say, I feel so refreshed. I have done these things, you know. And she hasn't eaten, she hasn't sleeping, she hasn't bathed, she hasn't pottied, she hasn't done anything, and yet she feels just as fresh as a rose. Now, why? Because she's doing what she's not destined to do, but what she's talented to do. She's doing what her artistic inner self tells her what to do, you know? It's really something. It's really something. I think a lot of our people are like that who come here to campus. They're talented, wonderful geniuses in so many areas, and they're ageless, and we look at them and we think that they are a certain age. Now, you look at Anita Lope. Now, you can't tell how old she is. You know, if you look closely at her face, that she's lived a few years. But if you stand back just a little bit, you don't even. And if you listen to her, you have no idea. And if you just hear how she responds and the things that she does, you say, my goodness sake, you know, teenager. But this is how all of us want to be. Living in that teenage consciousness, living in that consciousness that knows all things and is all things. My goodness sakes, doesn't it travel nicely? But it's not as much as we think it is. So think about what we're doing. Think about how we're living our life. How are we living our life? What are we doing that's important? What are we giving to ourselves? My universe exists now, and then it is incomparable. As I latch on to the now, I am the allness. So now, as you find your artistic talent, as you find your magical self of who and what you are, be it. Now, Gertrude thinks that taking care of her grandchildren is a wonderful growth experience. Well, It's not a wonderful growth experience. It is your nature. It is your love. It is your self. And if you were to say Gertrude is being an artist with her grandchildren, she'd say, oh, come on now. But she is. She could stay up all night. She could run all over the country for them. She could do everything for them, go to all of their activities at school. She could take care of them at home. She could go over to their parents' home and make the meals for the parents so they have something to eat too. And she just is totally dedicated to being herself and having fun. Now, that's one of her channels. Now, what is another one of her channels? And this is one that I know it won't surprise you, but it's one of her channels, driving her car. Up to this time that she learned how to drive a few years ago, she said, oh, I'm happy with the public transportation. I'm happy with my bike. I'm happy with these things. And once she got her car, I don't think she ever takes her bike out of the garage. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You take your bike down to the beach and run on the beach with it, huh? Yeah. But you see, her car has become another avenue of expression for her. It's given her the freedom to come and go and do what she wants to do. If she's got 20 minutes and she knows it takes 3 minutes to drive down to the lake and 3 minutes to drive back, that gives her 12 minutes to ride on her bike around the lake. And then she comes back and she's back and people say, oh, where have you been? Oh, I just took a ride around the Grafton Sea. And they say, so quick? Well, I didn't waste any time. I enjoy it, and I knew that I wanted it. I knew it would take so many minutes, and so I went and did it. Now, you see, do we do that? Or do we say, oh, I'm too tired to do this. Oh, I'm too tired to do that. Another thing about Gertrude. Gertrude lived in her apartment for at least 1,000 years, and it was a nice apartment. And I said, Gertrude, you could use a light over your kitchen sink and over your stove. And Gertrude said, No, I have had this all this way all my life. I have been, you know, with a horse and buggy all my life, and I don't want to have a car. I just want my horse and buggy. Just let me alone, you know. And so a light got in over her kitchen sink and over her stove, and she says, I never realized how pleasant it could be seeing what I was doing in my kitchen sink. And she often wondered why she had spots on her glasses and so forth. But she could never see them. You know, she could never see them. Now her glasses come out sparkly clean. But you see, I'm using that as an illustration of how we are reluctant to get out and try new things. We're reluctant to go out and do what comes to our attention. And it comes to our attention. And when Gertrude got Jerome into the choir to sing, because Gertrude loved being in the choir singing, what happened to Jerome? He protested. And he fell down the stairs and broke his jaw. And he couldn't sing. And people wondered, how come he broke his jaw? Didn't he want to sing? No, he didn't want to sing. But that was just his way of getting out of doing it for a short time. Eventually he had to sing anyhow. And he eventually found that he really loved it. But you see, I'm not kidding you. This is what people do to get away from doing something they don't want to do, and they don't have the guts to say, no, I will not do that. And we should be aware of that. We have all sorts of wonderful things going on in our life, all sorts of wonderful things going on that makes us have a lot of great experiences. Now, are you interested in having those experiences? Are you interested in going the whole route in the direction you want to go? But think of it. My universe exists now. Does your universe exist now?
Sure.
Then live it now. Are you ageless now?
Yes.
Yeah, then live it now. Yes. Don't go around trying to say, I will do it later. What happens to most people when they retire? They expire. When people retire, they die because they have nothing that challenges them, nothing that is exciting about it. they just sit around home and are a pain in the neck to their wife, who continues with her work. She never retires. You see, wives are fortunate because they never retire. And then they get themselves a job, and they quit from the job or retire from the job, and they've still got their homework, their housework to do. They still have their activities to do. And when you ever quit doing something that has been your life experience, you better replace it with something else. And replace it with writing. Replace it with being an artist. What did Winston Churchill do? He took out his palette and he started painting. What did Ike Eisenhower do? The former president and general of the army. He took out his paintbrush and started painting. You see, many another have done that. And Grandma Moses, she just slathered her paint around in her living room and just had a good time. And someone saw her paintings and said, hey, these are very charming. Early American, you know. And he sold them and made her very wealthy. And she continued painting because she just enjoyed it. Now, she didn't need to paint to make money. You understand? She painted to stay alive, to stay active and involved in being ageless. And she was in her 80s or 90s when she passed, I guess. But she just continued doing these great things. You and I, we can do them too. Do you want to do them? Do you want to stay alive? If not, just curl up and die. Get involved in life. Get involved and be ageless. Get involved and be filled with the power of the Spirit, the joy of doing things that are just so exciting and so rewarding. But you have the talent to do it. Now, are you ready to take that talent and apply it? Are you ready to make that talent yours? Do you want to? Think about it. Now, you see, another aspect of this, which is quite important, and we oftentimes forget it, is that we cannot compare ourselves to anyone else. We cannot compare ourselves to anybody else. We are incomparable. We are ourselves. If we ever look at another person and we judge them, we are comparing them to what we think they should be doing. We're comparing them to what we think should be the truth. And don't do that. Anytime you make a comparison of anything with anybody, you have just aged yourself 50 years. 50 years! Yeah. You age yourself 50 years because what you've done is that you have said that somebody else can do something you can't do, or you can do something somebody else can't do. And that's not good. Everything we do should be exactly what makes us feel very good and very happy. Everything we do should be so wonderful. I told you the story about my wife saying that I couldn't sing. And that I shouldn't sing and I shouldn't do these. Yeah, thanks a lot, Ellen. I shouldn't sing and I shouldn't do these things. And I said, Faith, did you ever listen to these kids on the radio and television who are doing these wonderful rock and roll type stuff, you know, this terrible type of music, and they're being paid handsomely for it, you know? Have you ever heard them, you know? And the world loves them. Now, don't I sing as good as them? She said, yeah, but I don't like them. And you see, comparing takes all the fun out of it. As for my wife, she's a concert pianist and organist. And every time she plays, I tell her how good she is, how wonderful she is, how magnificent she plays, whether she makes a mistake or not. And I know when mistakes are being made, but I don't care. I listen because I hear the beauty of the music. I don't judge. I don't compare. It's not comparable. If I were to compare her playing to somebody else, they would say, oh, she's not been practicing very much lately. And it's not that she doesn't practice. It's that she is giving up on living. She thinks that other people should help her and take care of her. And because she thinks that, she stopped doing all the great things she's been able to do. She's been into publishing with me. She's been into writing and articles and news editing. She could write articles for her local newspapers there. She could do all sorts of great things. She could just be so busy that she wouldn't have time to play with her grandchildren and play with her son and do these things. She'd just be so busy and so happy that she'd be involved in all these things. Now, why doesn't she do it? Well, it's none of my business, is it? None of my business. I don't care. I don't say, Faith, why don't you do that? I'm telling you that it's tempting to suggest that you write and that Ellen takes some time and does writing and that Sylvia and Ingeborg each take time to do writing. But really, I don't care. I don't care if you ever write a word. Because obviously, if you have to be pushed into writing, you have nothing to say. If you have to be forced into doing something of that nature, that's not your gift, that's not your talent. I cannot force Gertrude to take care of her grandchildren. Gertrude, you take care of your grandchildren. And Gertrude says, oh, hush up. And then she goes and takes care of her grandchildren. She does what she wants to do, but she's not going to be told by anybody what to do. If her son starts using her and saying, Mom, you got to do this for me. Mom, you got to do that. Mom, you got to do this. She'll say to her son, son, you're making enough money. Hire yourself a babysitter. Hire yourself a babysitter. When I want to take care of the grandchildren, I will. And when I don't want to, I won't. I am me. And sometimes she doesn't even say that. She just walks out of the room. Hey, where are you going? You're supposed to make stuff for you. Oh, am I your mother? Yes. Well, toodaloo. You know, I'm on my way. We can never allow other people to possess us or tell us what to do. For the minute we do that, that's just the toe in the door. Then they want us to do more and more. Should a grandmother ever clean the house for her grandchildren or for her son and daughter? No. No.
If she likes it.
No. If you do it, they will expect it. Now, what the grandmother should do, Ellen, is she should go and clean the house for the neighbor. You see? And the neighbor won't expect her to do it all the time. The neighbor will just be surprised. My goodness, how nice of you to clean my house, you know. How wonderful. You see, if people expect it, you don't do it. If people don't expect it, and then just go and do it and have fun. And don't tell them. If your son's house is in such disrepair that you don't want your grandchildren living there, when your son's not home, when he's off to work on a full day and you know he's gone, you go over and you clean that house out within an inch of his life, and you don't tell anybody. The kids are at school and everything. Well, Grossi, did you do this? And she will say, what do you mean? Oh, did you clean the house? Why would I ever clean your house? Why would I want to clean your house? Well, somebody cleaned it. It's sure nice, you know. It's so wonderful. I would sure like to say thank you to whoever did it. Well, why don't you say thank you to yourself? And the next time, put away everything before you do it, if you wish. But that's okay. You know, I don't care. And if you say even that much, that's too much, isn't it? Why is that too much? Because that's judging. That's comparing. And we don't tell other people how to live their life, ever. We don't tell people what clothing to wear. We don't tell people what shoes to put on. What mannerisms to put on, that never. If you start telling people, then you're in charge of them. And when you're in charge of them, then what happens to you? You are possessed by that project. And it's a very silly thing to be possessed by. And it's not something that we want to be possessed by. So, our last point here, as I latch on to the now, I am the allness. As I am aware of the now, I am the allness. How can you be aware of the now? How can you hold on to the now? Well, what sort of things have we used to describe nowness? Ellen, your good old favorite there. Be yourself and have fun. When you be yourself and have fun, you're not trying to do it for somebody else. Gertrude doesn't go over to her grandson, her son's house, and say, "Huh, this is terrible. You've got a dirty house here. You do this terrible. You do that." She doesn't say that. She goes over, and she says to Adrian, "Adrian, you delight me. You are the greatest father I have ever seen in a man. I am so proud of you. You take such care of your children at all times, and you maintain their homes in a wonderful way. I'm so proud of you, Adrian." And then get out of there. Another day, maybe say the same thing. But keep saying them. Then that quality within Adrian, which is there, it doesn't have to be the bar. You know, it doesn't have to be overplaying games with the boys and stuff like that. It could be doing that. And maybe that's what Adrian is really looking for. Think about this. Adrian looks for a femme fatale in his life, right? He wants a woman in his life. But he doesn't really want a woman in his life. And he doesn't really want sex. He doesn't really want these things. What he wants to do, he wants to express his own feminine side, his own gentle side, his own beautiful side. He expresses the masculine side a little bit, but he wants to express that feminine side of being a good housekeeper, being a good homemaker, being a good father, mother to the children. See? Now, when you start seeing him expressing that which he is, it'd be very much easier for you. Very much easier for the children. And how do you do things that are easier for you? Do you say to yourself, "Everything is in divine order," or do you go over and offer a few comments?
No, I do not say it. I think it.
You think it.
Yeah, all is in divine order.
And now, why don't you say it?
I think it's more powerful.
There is no objection when you think it, and you put that cause in motion. There's no objection. Does it work?
Yes.
Uh huh. And you've practiced it and you know it works? See, this is the thing. If we practice it and we know it works and we don't work it, we're silly. Such silly people, you know that. So, let's pay attention to this stuff now. So, I latch on to the now and I am the allness. I latch on to knowing what it is that I should do about myself. Now, should you go over and tell Adrian how to clean his house?
No.
Should you go over and tell Adrian he's a wonderful man, and he's a wonderful father, and he's a wonderful homekeeper, homewrecker, housekeeper, or whatever?
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Now, these are things we want to remember. So pay attention to this stuff. It really is fantastic. Alrighty. After lunch, we'll come back with "My Universe is My Fun Place in Which I Live." So, have a nice lunch, think about me, and know that I love you. I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you.